Okay. So we are holding on Pei Aleph Amud Aleph at the top by the Mishnah. So continuing again on the topic of different things that a person might carry on Shabbos and what's the amount they're chayav for if they carry it. So the Mishnah says Esem, if a person carries bone on Shabbos, then the shear to be chayav for their lachis tarvod is if it's large enough to make a spoon. So obviously there are different size spoons. Tosfos talks about that there are, in particular, you have a spoon that's mentioned in other places in Shas, as in Allah, the Tum of Atara, which is actually fairly large. It holds, according to one opinion, a double handful. But over here, apparently, we're talking about a smaller spoon, the kind that you would just use, the kind that you would just use to eat soup or whatever. So it was common enough in those days to use bone to make silverware. So there's to make cutlery, so therefore that would be the shear. Rabbi Yehuda says that it would be an amount that you could make with it a chof, which is a lock. Now, the Gemara is going to assume that it means the entire lock, and it's going to ask on that, and then eventually we're going to say that it means a component of a lock. Continues the mission. This is chuchis. If a person carries, the assumption might be to begin with that we're talking about even if we assume to begin with, as the Gemara is going to eventually say, that a chof means one of the components of a lock. It could be a large lock, and the Gemara is going to end up saying that according to the Yehuda, it means a small lock. Okay. The chuchis. If a person carries glass on Shabbos, then the amount is kedeligra bo rosh karko. It would be enough to scrape the end of the karko. The karko is that we learned when we looked at the malachas of weaving in the previous parak, where we went through the 39 malachas. So we talked about that when you have the shesi thread set up, you have you use a pointed stick called a karko to separate the shesi threads and make sure that they're all lying flat and they're all lying parallel to each other and so forth. You use this karka to hit them or to separate them or whatever and get them and get so and the end of the stick had to be short and one thing you could use because it was a wooden stick, so you could use a piece of glass to sharpen it. So therefore that would be the shear. Sure, if a person carries a pebble, a small rock on Shabbos, oy even, or a normal size rock, then the amount is kedelizrik for oy if it's large enough to throw at a bird and scare it away. Rabbi Elazar by Yaakov Omer, Rabbi Elazar by Yaakov Omer, kedelizrik for behemah. He says no, if it's big enough to throw at a bird, that's not big enough for our purposes. It has to be big enough that you would throw it at an animal to scare it away. Because Rashi explains, he takes the view you wouldn't bother picking up a stone if you have to scare away a bird from some place where it shouldn't be. You would just yell at the bird and make it fly away. So only if it's large enough to throw at an animal, only then is it significant enough. Starts off the Gemara. The question is, is it true that how can you say Rabbi Yehuda's size is bigger? We've had several times already where Rabbi Yehuda argues with the Chachamim, and we've established that Rabbi Yehuda always has a smaller shear for Hatzah than the Chachamim, because as you said, the rule is that it depends on how common the use is, and Rabbi Yehuda says even a somewhat less common use is still enough to make him chayev, as long as it is reasonably common, as long as it's not rare. So in that case, given that it is true that you use, so in the Mishnah, we're saying the Tanakhama is saying that bone would be only if it's enough to make a spoon, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying to make a chof, which on the face of it means a whole lock. So that would mean Rabbi Yehuda's size is bigger, because a lock is bigger than a spoon. Hakayim alon deshir and derabon anafish. And we know throughout the parak that the Chachamim size is always bigger, because they always go according to the use of it. It has to be very common, at least as common as another use. So in that case, Rabbi Yehuda would say, fine, it's common. So why are we saying? So what are we saying? It's common enough to make a spoon. It's somewhat common to make a lock. Therefore, Rabbi Yehuda would say, go according to that. But a lock, a whole lock, is larger than a spoon. The answer is, Omer Ula Chofei Pesacha. The answer is, Ullah says, we're talking about not the whole lock, but rather we're talking about the teeth of the lock. So the teeth, Rashi learns, are made out of bone. The lock itself, the lock itself would be made out of some other material, and then you would have teeth in them, sort of like you have nowadays. You put in a key, and it has to move the teeth, and those teeth are made out of bone. So then each of those teeth is much smaller than a whole spoon. So therefore, Rabbi Yehuda's shear comes out to be smaller after all. Okay, since we're talking about teeth of lock, so the Gemara says, Tanan Abanan, we learn the Braita. The teeth of a lock, if they weren't attached to the lock yet, then they're tahor, they're not metabol tumah because they're not functional yet. But if you attach them, to the lock, then they're metabol tumah. And it depends what kind of lock we're talking about. The shogal, if it's a lock that goes on a kelim, for example, on a closet or something, a lock that goes on there, so therefore it becomes part of the closet, and therefore it's makabel tumah. Rashi points out that bone, and again we're talking about over here bone teeth, so they are makabel tumah even if they don't have a receptacle. Unlike, for example, if these teeth were made out of wood, they wouldn't be makabel tumah unless they actually could contain something within them. But over here, we don't say that because it's bone, and bone is different. Bone, Rashi says, is like metal in that regard. Rashi also explains, you can't say it would be tahor because it's attached to, you can't say it's tahor because it's attached to the lock, and the lock is not makabel tumah, because in fact, Rashi says the lock is makabel tumah because it has a receptacle, because you put the key into the lock, so therefore the lock itself would be makabel tumah. However, continues the Braita, the shogal, but if it's a lock of a gate, af al pi shechidran badelas, even if you attach the teeth to the door, the kovan b'masmerim, or even if you attach the teeth or the lock as a whole with nails, tahorin, then it's not makabel tumah, shekolam achubel akarka, hareyuk akarka, because anything that's attached to something that's attached to the ground, as in this case, the gate or the door is attached to the ground, then it's not makabel tumah. So in that case, the lock wouldn't be makabel tumah. Tosfos and a number of Rishonim have a number of problems with what Rashi is saying. First of all, this that Rashi is saying that bone is not makabel tumah unless it has a receptacle is not so simple. Actually, it can be. So Tosfos has it, and also how can you say the lock is considered a kli kibble? How can you say the lock is a kli kibble because you put the key into it? You only consider something a kli kibble if you take the thing, you take the keli with the other material inside it, and you carry it around like that. For example, you have, let's say, a bowl that holds liquid or something like that, or a table that holds things on it, fine. But you don't carry around the lock with the key in it. You use the key to open the lock. So therefore, Tosfos has a whole different answer. That Tosfos learns over here that here we're talking about the teeth are made out of metal. Now, metal itself is makabel tumah, whether it has a kli kibble or not. However, if it's not attached to the lock yet, it wouldn't be makabel tumah because it's called gomei klei masas. It's called an unfinished metal keli because an individual tooth by itself is not really, you can't use it as part of the lock yet, but okay, whatever uses you could find for it, for a small piece of metal like that, it's not really something useful yet. So only when you attach it to the lock, then it's makabel tumah, because now the kli is completed, and then if it's a lock that's attached to the ground, then it's tahor because it's attached to the ground. Okay. Getting back to the Mishnah, we said zechuchis kedei ligrabar. We said if a person carries glass, then if it's a piece of glass large enough to scrape the end of the karka, or that long thin stick that we said you use to separate the shefen thread, the tonne, we learn in a braisa, a different amount, schuchis, if a person carries schuchis, and here it's spelled with a samach, but it means the same thing as Zechuchus with a Zayin. The word Zechuchus is found in one place in Tanakh, in Sefer Iyov, and it's written with a Zayin. But in the Brayta over here, it's Zechuchus with a Samach, Moloshan Socha, which means to see, because you can see through glass. So anyway, so it's the same thing. So then the amount would be, if it's large enough that you could cut off two threads from the loom at one time. So the Meiri actually says the same amount. The Braita is not arguing with the Mishnah. It's just saying a different way of saying the same thing, because the same size piece that you can use to sharpen the karka, you could also use to cut two threads off the loom. Meaning when you're finished weaving the cloth, you have to cut it away from the loom, because then you're going to start weaving the next piece. So you use something sharp. You could use a knife or a scissors, but you could also use a piece of glass for the purpose. Okay. We said throw a even to the lizard for oath. If it's a small stone or a large stone, a pebble or a stone, then the shear would be the kind of camera says if it's large enough to throw at a bird to scare it away. And we said Rabbi Yaakov says only if it's large enough to throw at an animal. So like I mentioned, what do you mean? If it's large enough to throw at an animal, you could throw a much smaller stone at an animal. You could actually throw the same size one as you would throw at a bird. So what's the difference? It has to be that this stone is large enough, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, that the animal is actually going to feel it when you throw the rock at it. In other words, sometimes you throw something at an animal and it sees it and it runs away because you're throwing it, even though it's small enough that when it actually lands on the animal, that it doesn't feel it. So therefore, Rabbi Yechanan is saying that it has to be large enough for actually to feel it. You have one of the Mephoshim on the Rif called the Riv Avon. One of the Rishonim learns the other way around. That you could have the other way around also, right? You could have the animal feel the blow from the rock, but it's not going to make it run away yet. And even that, and then Rabbi Yechon is saying that even that, according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, would be enough. Okay, so for Kamashir, right? What's the size of rock that the animal is actually going to feel it when you throw it at it? Tanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, I'm a Mishkam Asara Zul. If it weighs 10 zuzim, a zuz is 1/24 of a zuz is 1/24 of a sella. A sella weighs a bit less than an ounce, four fifths of an ounce or so. You're talking a little less than half that. So that would be the size.
What? Wouldn't it depend what type of animal, if it's a cow or if it's a sheep, or it wouldn't depend the size of the animal?
Could be, but I guess the Gemara is assuming that not. I guess they lived with animals and worked with them a lot more than we do, so I guess they were more familiar with. I guess the Chachamim figured out that once you have a stone, the weight of 10 zuz, then any animal is at least going to feel it. Again, as we said, it may or may not run away because of it, but at least it'll feel it.
Right, a sheep will feel much more than a big, heavy cow.
That may be, but you know, it's sort of like what to do. It's sort of like you have an expression in a Gemara in Yuma that a regular person is chayav for eating a kesevas on Yom Kippur, and Og Melech HaBoshan also is, because Og Melech HaBoshan is much bigger than an average person. But any person, the Chacham has figured out, once they eat a kesevas the size of a large date, then it'll calm their hunger pangs, and they won't feel as hungry anymore. So for a regular person, it'll calm them down a lot, and for a Gemara Chabashan, it'll calm them down a little, but it'll still have an effect on them. So maybe the same thing. The Gemara figured out over here, 10 zuz is already enough that any animal will feel it. Some animals will feel it more, some will feel it less, but they'll all feel it. It could also be that practically speaking, we might not be talking about scaring away a small animal. We might be that when we're talking about you have to throw a rock at an animal. It might be when we're talking about throwing a rock at an animal, we're talking about only maybe about a large animal that like is grazing in your field or whatever, and you need to scare it away. We're not necessarily talking about, let's say, a sheep. I don't know. It's a good point, but since the Gemara doesn't make the distinction, then apparently it's the same size for any size animal. So we're holding about a third of the way down Pei Aleph Amud Aleph. Okay, since we're talking about rocks on Shabbos, and we just mentioned the shear that a person would be chayav for throwing a rock, the Gemara mentions in this connection, By the way, actually, I miscalculated. A zuz actually is the same. A zuz is the same as a dinar, and a dinar is a quarter of a sela. So if a sela is a little under an ounce, then a dinar is about one sixth of an ounce, and 10 of those would be around 2 ounces. Okay. So since we're mentioning stone, we're going to go now on pretty much the whole rest of the daf. We're going to be talking, not pretty much, but a large part of it, we're going to be talking about the dinim of using stones to wipe oneself after you go to the bathroom on Shabbos. In those days, of course, they didn't have toilet paper or whatever. So one of the things they could use is stones. So we're going to talk about those dinim. So the Gemara says, Zunin Olubei Medrasha, Zunin, that was his name, one time came into the Beit Medrash. Almost we find in a number of places in Gemara, Yabaitus ben Zunin, who was a balabos in the times of Rav Gamliel. He was a Yoreh Shamayim, and the Gemara brings in a number of places, various things that he did, and various questions he asked the Chachamim. Repashtus, I guess this Zunin could be his father, or his son, or whatever. Anyway, so Zunin came into this Medrash. Omolahu, he asked the Chachamim, Rabbeisai, Avonim shal beis hakiseh shi'urin bekama. The stones that a person uses to wipe themselves by the beis hakiseh, what's the size that if a person carries them on Shabbos, he would be chayav chaseh? Actually, there are two explanations. Number one is how large would they have to be for a person to be chayav for carrying them on Shabbos? Is it the same shear as we said in the Mishnah when they're large enough to throw at a bird or at an animal? Or Rashi says a second explanation is that Rashi says it amounts to the same thing, because whenever something is chashuv, then that's the shear for carrying it on Shabbos. So is it that, or he's asking, what's the shear as far as that you'd be allowed to move them around in the chaser and take them to where you need to go to the bathroom? Now, normally stones on mukta, but as we're learning in the Gemara, as we're going to be learning in the sugi over here, you are allowed, the Chachamim did allow you to use stones like that because of kavod abrius. Since the whole thing of mukta is only the Rabbanan, and the Rabbanan themselves can make exceptions for it for kavod abrius. So therefore, so the question is, what are the size stones that you can use for that purpose? So the Chachamim told him, you can use 3 stones, kezayis, ke'egos, v'kabesa. You bring in 3. One is the size of a kezayis, the next one is larger, and it's the size of a walnut, and the third one is the size of a kabesa, meaning Rashi describes you start from the smallest one to the larger one. You don't want to start with the larger one because you still have a lot over there to wipe away, and a large one is just going to smear it around. So therefore, you start with the smaller one, get as much of it as you can, and then go on to the next one and continue from there. So Zunin says, you're telling me these exact sizes, the chiturit and the yachid. What is the person supposed to take along with him to the bathroom, a scale, to weigh the exact size of the stone? So the Chacham sat down and discussed it. Nimnu v'gamru. Eventually they voted and decided that the halacha is meloi hayad, you're allowed to take a handful. So you have a couple of different explanations of Rishonim. Rashi explains that it just means you could have 3, you could have 4, whatever it is, you could have 5, as long as they all fit in your hand. So that would be the amount. There's a couple of other explanations. Rabbi Hananel says it means that the 3 stones, each of them can be the size that would fit in your hand, so that means somewhat larger than the sizes that we said before. A number of other Rishonim also accept that. Tanya, Rav Yossi Omer, Kazayis Ke'egas Kabeta. We learn in a Braita where Rav Yossi says, like the original thing that Chachamim said, that you have the 3, the size of a Zayis and Egas in a Beta. Rav Shimon, it says on the side of here, it's really supposed to be Rav Shmuel, but Rav Yossi says in the name, Omer Mishum Ovid, he says in the name of his father, in the name of Rav Yossi, that actually the amount is Meloi Hayad, a handful. So in other words, we said that Zunin asked the Chachamim, and they first said the amount that Rabbi Yossi said, and then they changed their mind and said Kimloy Ayad. So apparently what it is what we're quoting over here in the Braita, in the name of Rabbi Yossi, is what the Chachamim said originally, and what we're quoting in the name of Rabbi Shmuel but Rabbi Yossi, who said in the name of his father, is Rabbi Yossi changed his mind along with the other Chachamim and accepted the second thing. Okay. Shana Rabbanon, the Shabbos, Gimel Avonim Kuzolis, Mutar Lahachmit, Lebeit HaKisei. On Shabbos, you're allowed to bring three Avonim Mekuzolos into the Beit HaKisei. Rashi explains that Mekuzolos means where one end of them is, Rashi over here uses the word because, which literally means that they have a crack in them. However, it seems that on the side of it here, it brings from the Marshal that actually it's supposed to be that Rashi is giving a French translation that means sharpened. And what it means is, in other words, that one end of the stone is sharper, not sharp enough to tear the skin, but sharp, in other words, a little sharper than the other end, and therefore it's more usable for wiping. Tosfos in some other places talks about that's not what Mekuzolos means. Tosfos in those other places means Mekuzolos means that they're a little bit soft, so therefore they're more comfortable to wipe with. Anyway, you're allowed to bring three of them into the Beit HaKisei in order to wipe with. So Rashi says, we're talking about over here, either you're in Rosh Hashanah and you're carrying them less than four amos, which you're allowed to do, again, because it's covered every year, or we're talking about in a chaser, where you have an Eruv and you're allowed to carry them any amount. So in other words, the point is, it's not a problem of the Isser of Hotzah. It's only a question of Mukta, and again, the Chachamim made an exception for the purpose of people being able to wipe. Okay. So you're allowed to take them. Three, the Kamashurim, what's the size of them? Rameo Emeka Egos, Rabbi Yehuda Emeka Beta. Rameo says that each of them can be the size of a walnut, and Rabbi Yehuda says each one can be the size of an egg. So that's those that before we had, the Chacham said three of them, one the size of an olive, one the size of a walnut, one the size of an egg. So here, these Chachamim are arguing with that. So the Gemara says, "Amar Rasam bar Papa, Amar Rav Chista, ki machloikus kan kach machloikus be'esrin." The same machloikus that we have over here about the size of the stone that you can use for wiping is the same machloikus that you have in connection with an esrin in Masechta Sukkah, where you have Rav Meir holds that the smallest size esrin that you're allowed to use is one that's the size of a walnut, and Rav Yehuda says the size of an egg. So the same thing over here. Rav Meir is saying that you're allowed to use stones for wiping that are the size of a nut, of a walnut, and Rabbi Yehuda is saying the size of an egg. So you want to ask, why are you saying it that way? Over there you have a Mishnah. Here we're talking about Braisa. Mishnayos, we know throughout Shas, the general rule was the Chachamim knew all of the Mishnayos. Not necessarily did they know all of the Braisas. So why are you taking it as a given? Okay, we have the Machlokes and this Braisa, and to help you remember the Mishnah, you should realize the Mishnah is like the Braisa. It should be the other way around. You should use the Mishnah to help you remember the Braisa. Because the Mishnah is more well known. So you're right. Elif Machlokes Esur Kach Machlokes Ravonim. You're right. We have to flip it around and say that it's the other way around. What Rashi Papa meant was the other way around. That just like the machlokas we have in the Mishnah and Sukkah. So over here you have the same machlokas as far as Esrog. So that way, in other words, even if you forget the Mishnah in Sukkah, if you remember the Mishnah in Sukkah and you forget the Brayta over here, where you get mixed up. Which one is which? What does your mayor say? What does your mayor say? What does your Yehuda say? Then you can remember. Based on what you have in the Mishnah and Sukkah, and remember, okay, there I remember the Mishnah because the Mishnah, and it's easier to remember that Rav Meir says like a nut and Rav Yehuda says like an egg, and therefore you'll remember that the same thing is true over here. Okay. Continues the Gemara. Okay, so you're allowed to use stones for the purpose of wiping on Shabbos, as we're saying. Omer, Rabbi Yehuda, Avaloya Sakpayas. However, Rabbi Yehuda says you're not allowed to use a pious for wiping. The my pious, Omer Abdera, Kashini Bavlo Yosta. It means clods of dirt from Bavlo. So Kashini literally. Kashina literally is a type of beans, but we're not talking about real beans. We're talking about clods of dirt. Rashi explains, unlike Eretz Yisrael, where the ground is drier, in Babel the ground is moister because low lying and it's watered by rivers. So therefore, when you plow the ground over there, you end up with clods of dirt. So so you're not allowed to use just a clod of dirt to wipe on Shabbos because it falls apart and it's not going to do any good. So therefore, so you're not allowed to do that because anyway, it's not going to be functional. Okay, you have a different explanation. That different explanation that other Rishonim say that the problem is because they're very soft and therefore you're going to end up grinding. In effect, you're going to end up grinding them up. When it comes to a stone, if the stone is, as Rashi said, it was sharpened, that one it was sharper at one end, or as Tosfos says, is softer a little bit, fine, but it's not going to actually fall apart. But over here, you're talking about a clod of dirt. If you use it to wipe with, it's going to actually fall apart, and then you're going to be over on the issue of Toichin. So, okay, Klach HaYad, maybe it's only also the Rabbanon, but fine, still the Chachamim are going to say you can't do that. You have to use actual stones. Which, by the way, I guess might have made it a little bit difficult for them in Bavel, because, in fact, Bavel being low-lying ground and being watered by rivers, you didn't have a lot of stones over there. So what they used, I don't know. Maybe they had smaller stones, or maybe they had to use something else. I don't know. Okay. In this connection, Amar Rava, also l'mashmish b'tzrur b'shabbos k'derach sh'mashmish b'chol. Now, what happens is sometimes when a person needs to go to the bathroom and they're constipated and they can't easily go, so what they do is, as we're going to discuss later on on Amar Beis, that what you do is you take a stone or you take something else. And you rub it around in that area by the anus over there, and that loosens things up a little bit and helps you be able to go to the bathroom. So on the face, the rubber is saying you're not allowed to use a rock for that Shabbos the way you would do it on weekdays, because you have hair around there, or an adult very often has hair around that area, and when you're mamashmash, you're going to pull out some of the hairs, and therefore it would be inevitable that you're going to pull out or cut off some of the hairs, and therefore it would be osur. Rabbi Hanano gives a different explanation: is that you might end up grinding or smoothing out the stone as you're using it. So Rava is saying you're not allowed to do that. Mask for Mazutra. However, Mazutra asks on that. What do you mean with stocking? So what is the guy supposed to be in danger if he can't go to the bathroom? And the Gemara says in many places, we learned it already in Brachas, that if a person holds back when they have to go to the bathroom, then it's dangerous. It can bring on a disease called hidroitum, so a swelling of the stomach, whatever. So what is the poor guy supposed to do over here? Is he supposed to not go to the bathroom at all because he can't do this mishmush? So the answer is Gemara says tilachayad. So rubber would mean you can't do it in the normal way, but you can do it till achayad. Meaning, Rashi explains, instead of holding it in your hand as you usually would, so when rubber says you're not allowed to kederach shemamash mishpachol, he doesn't mean you're not allowed to do it at all because it's the way you would do it on weekdays. He just means you're not allowed to do it in the regular way that you would do it on weekdays. The regular way is you would just hold it between in all your fingers. You can use, for example, you hold it, let's say, with two of your fingers. You hold it, let's say, with two of your fingers rather than with your thumb and one of your fingers. So then you're allowed. I still psik reisha. The one possibility is then, in fact, it's not psik reisha, because if you do it like that, then you're doing it much more gently, and therefore there's much less likelihood that you're going to pull out hairs. And the other possibility is, even if it is, pulling out hairs for that purpose itself would only be also dirabbanan, because you're not meaning to pull them out, and even if it is psik reisha, you're not doing it because you need the hairs, so it's not malacha shetzricha legufa. So therefore the Chacham would allow it because it would be dangerous for him otherwise. Continues the Gemara. Amar Rav Yanai, going back to the matter of using stones to wipe after going. To wipe after going to the bathroom. By the way, the Bach has a different explanation. That the Bach has a different explanation. It's not that necessarily he's going to be pulling out hairs when he's doing this mishmush over there. What it is though, we require him to do it a different way in order that he remembers that it is Shabbos and doesn't come to deliberately pull out the hairy. So therefore, that's why he has to use, that's why the Bach says, that's why we make him hold the stone between his two fingers only when he's doing this mishmush over there, when he's rubbing around there in order to stimulate and then being able to go to the bathroom. That way he remembers that it's Shabbos and he remembers that he doesn't, that he's not going to pull out hairs. Okay. If there's a fixed place that a person has to go to the Beis HaKisseh, then he's allowed, to take a handful of stones, even though he may not necessarily need all of them, because, okay, he doesn't use them this time, then he'll use them the next time he goes to the bathroom. In Lav, but if it's not a regular place where people go to the bathroom, then he's only allowed the Hechra. Then he's only allowed according to the middle size. Meaning, in other words, we said before, we mentioned before three sizes, the size of a kezias, of an olive, of a nut, or of an egg. So the walnut is the middle size. So therefore, Rav Yana is saying, if it's not a regular Beis HaKisseh, then you're only allowed to take in a stone the size of a nut. And then the Gemara mentions another din in this connection. Now Tosfos learns differently, but first of all, talk according to Rashi. Another din, Meducha Ktana Shel B'Samim, a small mortar that's used for spices. And you could also, now normally it's mukta on Shabbos because you use it to grind up spices, but you could also conceivably use it for wiping. So all you're allowed to on Shabbos. So Amar Rav Sheshet in Yeshalara aid mutter. If there's evidence on it that it was previously used for wiping, then mutter, then you would be allowed to pick it up and use it for wiping on Shabbos. In other words, the point is, once it was used for wiping, nobody is ever going to use it again for grinding up spices. So therefore, now it's like any other rock, and therefore you'd be allowed to use it. If not, then it's still considered mukta. Tosfos has a different explanation on it. Tosfos brings a girsa of Rabbeinu Hananel that the two things we mentioned are connected together. When we said Rashi had divided them, Kehechra and then Meducha Ktana Shel B'Samim, that these are two different dinim. One is that if it's not a Beis HaKisseh Kavua, then you're allowed only to take in the stone that's the size of the Hechra, which Rashi said was the size of the walnut, and then a separate din about Meducha Ktana Shel B'Samim. Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Hananel that actually what it means is that it goes together, and the word hechra means a leg, like the word kraim. So therefore, it's all one din, that if it's not a Beis HaKisseh Kavua, then the size of the stones you're allowed to take in for that purpose would be the size of the leg of a small mortar that you use for grinding spices. So not a different din about taking the mortar itself and using it for wiping, but rather that the size of the leg of the mortar determines the size of the stone that you would be allowed to use for wiping in the bathroom in that case. Okay. The Gemara says, "Maybe I have a contradiction." We're saying, so either way, according to either explanation, the point is we're saying that if this meducha or if this stone was previously used for wiping, then you're allowed to use it for wiping again on Shabbos. So the Gemara says, because that's what we said, if there's an aid on it, if there's evidence on it that it was previously used. But it wasn't basically, I have a contradiction, you shouldn't be doing that in the first place. A Braisa says, I started Vodim Avian at the Adam Ridei Tachtonius. There are 10 things that if a person does them, it causes him to have hemorrhoids. We learned this in Brachas as well. The Elohim, and they are as follows. Ha'ichol alei kanim, if a person eats the leaves from reeds, so you have reed plants like bamboo or papyrus or whatever, if a person eats those leaves, then it causes them hemorrhoids. Number two, va'alei kfanim, or grape leaves. Now, we know that the Sfardim have a popular dish that they eat stuffed grape leaves, so maybe it's different after the leaves are cooked, I don't know. Number three, the lulveig fanim. Number three, the soft ends of the branches of grapevine. To be exact, actually, it actually says it means a grapevine has little soft things, little soft tendrils, they're called in English, that come off it, which when you have a vine will climb up on a tree or on a fence or a trellis or whatever, using those, because one of those tendrils will grab onto the thing, and the vine will be able to grow upward using that. So for a person, those things are soft, they're edible, but they bring a person to hemorrhoids. The next one is umevige behema, the rough parts of an animal, meaning, in other words, Rashi says you have different parts of an animal that you have that are rough. Like morag literally means a threshing sledge that you use to thresh grain, which has a bunch of bumps and grooves and whatever in it. So the same way, you have parts of the body of an animal that are like that also. For example, Rashi says the outside of the tongue. The outside of the tongue, you have the roof of the mouth of the animal, the basicosis, one of the stomachs of the animal, those kinds of things are all rough, and though they cause a person to have hemorrhoids. The next one is that if a person eats them without salt. Then the shedre shel dog, the spine of a fish, the dog maliach ledisho kol sarfei, a salted fish that was not completely cooked. If a person drinks the dregs of wine, the stuff that falls to the bottom of the container, if a person wipes himself after he goes to the bathroom with lime, with plaster, like we talked about yesterday, the kind of stuff that you could use to smear on unwanted hair or whatever, but it's also a person could use it for wiping, but it brings him to hemorrhoids, or with ground up brick, actually says that this refers back to the Sid and the Chalasis as well, that somebody else wiped with. So in other words, the problem is not using Sid in and of itself. The problem is using Sid or a stone that somebody else used previously to wipe with. So we see that if it was used to wipe with already previously, then it's not good to use. It can bring hemorrhoids. The yesh omer afal tola asman betakite. Some say another one also somebody who suspends himself in the bathroom, meaning in other words the normal way is the person squats down. And like this, you could have a person doesn't, but he squats down without getting all the way down. So like they're hanging in the air. Their backside is hanging in the air. So the Yeshayim say that also brings the hemorrhoids. Anyway, the point is that one of the ones we had on the list over here is where the person is wiping with a stone or a seed or whatever that somebody else previously used to wipe with, then it's no good for you. It brings the hemorrhoids. But here Rav Sheshet is saying that if you have a stone that has evidence on it that it was previously used for wiping, then that's the kind that you're allowed to use on Shabbos, even if it's not a basic case of kavua, or even as Rashi says, even if you're using a small mortar, you're changing the use of it and using it to wipe with it. Or Tosfos says another possibility that it means that even if it's not a basic case of kavua, if it's a larger stone but you have evidence that it was previously used, then you would be allowed to use it. Anyway, so why is that? If it's not good to use because bad for your health, then you shouldn't be using it. The answer is like kasha habalach habayavish. There's a difference whether the aid that's on there, whether the excrement that's on there before that a person wipes, whether it's dry, whether it's still moist, or whether it's dry. If it's still moist, you shouldn't be using it. That can bring the hemorrhoids. But if it's dry, then you're already able to use it, and it won't have any health implications. The boy's aimer, or another possibility, can be tzadech or can be based dodin. You could be talking about whether you're talking about using the same side as the previous person used, or you're talking about using the other side of the stone. The Iboisema, or third possibility, Hodigay, Hodichavre, one's talking about where he previously himself used it to wipe. So then obviously if he uses it again, there's no problem of it bringing tachtonius to hemorrhoids, because the whole problem that the Braitha said is when somebody else used it. Hodichavre, whereas the Braitha is talking about somebody else used it. So you have a number of different ways where even though the stone was used before, you're able to use it again. And by the way, you know, having learned this Gemara, we should be very grateful that we live nowadays where we have modern conveniences like toilet paper.
Yeah, I mentioned to my father, people had a very hard life years back.
Yes, it's true.
And my father told me it was us anyhow. We just came on different neshamas, so we went through it really.
I guess that's true.
Okay. Whatever.
Yeah. All Malaya
by the goof of a person is holy because we're learning about it from Gemara, and you know, it's not a story. It just shows that the goof is holy.
And it goes to show also that even something low down in duty like this, like going to the bathroom, is still there's an important part of Torah that talks about the dinim involving it. Omalei Abaye L'Rav Yosef, Abaye asked Rav Yosef, what about, so let's say you have this mortar that you previously used to wipe with, which again we said that if there's an aid on it, then you're allowed to reuse it and it's not considered mukta. Or according to Tosfos, we're talking in general, that if you have a stone that was previously used for wiping and now you want to use it again, so even if it's not a beis hakisei kavur, you're allowed to. Abaye asked Rav Yosef, Yodu alev shamim, what if rain fell on the stone or on the mortar? Then he tashed the shoe, and what was left, the aid over there, was sort of wiped away by the rain, so you can't see it so clearly. So Mahu, what's the din? Are you still allowed, is still considered that you're allowed to use it for wiping or not? Amalei, so Rav Yosef says, Imha yavishuma nikar, if you can still see a trace of it, mutter, then it's still allowed to be used. But if not, if there's no trace of the soya left, then it would go back to the din. Then it would go back to the din of a regular meducha or a regular rock, and it would and you would have restrictions on whether you can use it or not. Okay, another one. Now all this time we're talking about, let's say a person is going to the bathroom on the ground, but what if a person instead goes up onto the roof in order to go to the bathroom? Is he allowed to take the stones with him up there in order to wipe with afterwards? Is it considered tircha yaseva? Is it considered too much of a bother, which the Chachamim would say is also which usually we say that tircha yaseva is also on Shabbos. So that would be the question. Tosfos explains that no, the question is that the question is the beis hakisei is usually very close to the roof, so therefore you could prepare the stones before Shabbos and reach them from the roof. And the question is, are you allowed to bring them up onto the roof, or do you have to actually leave them on the ground and then reach down and get them? Amalei, so the beis hakisei answers him. There's a rule. Godo quod abrius shadoichas loisa sashabatora. Covered abrius, the honor of human beings, is a great thing. It even sometimes overrides the loisa sashabatora. Meaning, Rashi says, you have, let's say, for example, when it comes to Ashavas Aveda, the Torah tells us that if you see a lost object belonging to another yid, then you salamta mehem. So in the simple meaning of the pasuk, if the pasuk is asking a rhetorical question, then you salamta mehem, should you hide yourself from them? You should not. Hoshet teshivam, you have to return them. But the way the pasuk is phrased, it sounds like a statement, you may hide yourself from them. So therefore, the Gemara explains in Bava Metzia, in Eila Metzia, when it talks about these dinim, that there are certain cases where you are allowed to hide yourself and pretend like you didn't see the aveda. Some of them involve actual halachas. For example, if a kohen sees something lost in a beis hakavaris, he's not allowed to go in there to return it because then he'd be over on an esther and a lois that's there, and you can't do that to be mekayim the mitzvah esther of hashavas aveda. But another example that involves covered abrius is, let's say, for example, an old person where it's beneath his dignity to carry this kind of thing. There's a carrier to deal with this kind of thing, so it's beneath his dignity. So then he's allowed to pretend like he didn't see it. So you have an example of covered abrius overriding a lois esser shabbatera. So we're saying that even an actual lois esser is we sometimes override because of covered abrius. So the same thing over here. When we're talking about a matter involving muksa, or involving tircha yaseira, which usually is gzeira de rabbanon, and this that we have to listen to the gzeira de rabbanon is also based on a lois esesh of the Torah, because the Torah says lois sotzer mikol adavar, you're not allowed to turn away from any matter that the chachamim tell you. So therefore, so we're saying, but covered abrius will override that lois esesh, and therefore you're able to do it. By the way, we learned a sugya about this in Brachos as well, that we said by the same token, for example, if a person is wearing shatnez daraisa in the street, then they have to remove it, even if it means they're going to be undressed, because daraisa you can't play around with. But when it comes to a din d'rabbanon, when it comes to shatnez d'rabbanon, then if the person is wearing it in the street, you don't have to rip it off them in the street, and they themselves don't have to remove it right away in the street. They're allowed to continue wearing it until they get home, and then they can change. So that's another example where we see that kavod habriyos overrides a lois aseh shabbatah, meaning this lois that said the lav of lois that the Torah tells us we should not turn away from anything the chacham tells us. So Yosef Maremer Ka'amal al-Hashmaita, Maremer one time was sitting and saying over this statement of Rav Chista's about the question about bringing the stones up to the roof or not. Eisei Ravina Maremer. So Ravina says to Maremer, I have a problem with that based on a Braita. Rav Eliezer Omer, it's actually part of it is a Mishnah in Beita, but the rest of it is a Braita. So the Gemara just quotes the Braita. A person would be allowed to, on Yom Tov, to take a chip of wood from wood that's lying on the ground to pick his teeth, to be able to take something out that's stuck between his teeth. Now, usually, chips of wood like that would be mukta, but Rabbi Eliezer allows it for that purpose in order to pick his teeth. The Chum say, no, you can't use regular chips of wood because those are mukta. You can only use ones that are, for example, from the trough of the animal where the animal has its food, which actually Tosfos says, okay, doesn't mean specifically from an avos. It means anything else that was set aside for use before Shabbos, because otherwise it would be mukta. So the point is, in other words, so you see that even when you're dealing with covered up breeders, because you don't want, a person shouldn't be going out in the street with food stuck between their teeth, nevertheless, the Chachamim are not allowing for the sake of covered up breeders for you to handle mukta. So then, in that case, why should it be different with the stones on top of the roof? There's a big Gemara answer. Hochi Hashta. How are you thinking to compare the two cases? Hosam Odom Kaveya Mokam Masoda. In that case, a person pre-designates a place where he plans to eat his meal, but therefore he should have prepared toothpicks there ahead of time. By the way, picking your teeth on Shabbos and Yom Tov, if it makes your gums bleed, is a different issue. Then you're not necessarily allowed to do that. But we're talking about over here where a person has healthy gums, and picking their teeth is not going to make them bleed. Anyway, so a person sets aside a place for a Suda before Shabbos, so therefore before Yom Tov, whatever. So therefore, he should be preparing toothpicks there ahead of time. Does a person always pre-designate a place for the Beis HaKisef? Sometimes it happens. You have a regular place where you've gone to the bathroom before, but now it turns out you go there and you find somebody else is already sitting there. So then you have to go find someplace else. Obviously, they didn't have bathrooms in their houses. So in particular, Rashi explains if a person lives on a second floor, and they often did, then of course they really don't have a place, because at least if you live on the ground floor, fine, it's not that hard to go out and find a place. But if you live on the second floor, then you really have a hard time of it, and then you have to go and find some place, and it might not be any place that you've ever used before. So you can't necessarily expect, but then the person might have no choice. He might have to go up onto the roof. So therefore you can't not allow him to take the stones up there on the ground of Tirchi Yisera, because what could he do? He didn't know before Yom Tov that necessarily he's going to have to go there. Okay, according to Tosfos, again, the question was that the question is he could have set them aside on the roof or near the roof before Shabbos, and we're still saying that if he didn't before Shabbos, then he's still allowed to bring them up there on Shabbos. He doesn't have to bring them because the point is, again, maybe he would have gone up onto the roof, but not necessarily. And even if he brought them onto the roof and put them there before Shabbos, somebody else might end up using the roof for the same purpose and take those stones and use them, and then he's still going to be stuck. So therefore, the Chacham would allow him to take the stones with him. Okay. More dinim about going to the bathroom. Amar Rav Huna, also liponis the sudden near b'Shabbos. You're not allowed, says Rav Huna, to go to the bathroom in a plowed field on Shabbos. We're talking about the field has been plowed. It hasn't yet been planted. So you're not allowed to. My time. So they're going to ask my time. Why not? Elena Michelle Dabsha, are you going to say the reason is because what you're doing is you're trampling on the field, and then you're ruining the whole point was the poor guy plowed the field in order to soften up the dirt, and you're undoing that by trampling all over it and hoarding it again. So maybe you're not allowed to, because not because of the dinim of Shabbos per se, but because of the dinim of Nizikin. So in and of itself, actually, Nayab, the Gemara mentions in Bava Kamma that there is one of the takonis that Yeshua made when the Jewish people first entered Eretz Yisrael, that you are allowed to go into somebody else's field and go to the bathroom. So that in and of itself would be allowed, but maybe the Gemara is saying maybe you're not allowed to when it was freshly plowed, because then you're ruining his plowing. The problem with that is, then Akiva B'chil Nami. Then why is he saying that on Shabbos? And the same thing would apply on weekdays as well. The Ella Mishum Asovim. Are you going to say the reason is because there's grass, or moss or whatever growing on the stone? Meaning, in other words, that when you plow a field, so like this, you have so like this, we said before that the ground in Eretz Yisrael tended to be drier. In Bavel, we said it was moister. But either way, the point is, after you plow up, you're plowing up, you have the undersoil is being brought up. So therefore, it ends up being more moist. And therefore, you have rocks and pebbles and clumps of dirt and whatever in the field end up growing grass on them much more easily because they're moist. So therefore, the concern is that you're going to take one of those stones and use it to wipe with on Shabbos, and then those blades of grass that are on it are going to be torn off, and then you're being over on the Isser on the Isser of Kotzer on Shabbos. If that's the reason, then no, can't be. Well, Amar Rish Lakish, Srosh over by Asavim. Rish Lakish says that a stone that grass is growing on it, Mutul Kaneachba, you are allowed to wipe with it on Shabbos because it's Dabar She'en Meskaben, which Reb Shimon says is allowed. It's not Sik Resha, because not necessarily are they going to get torn off. So if a person deliberately tears off the grass when on Shabbos, then there would be chayav chatos. But just picking it up and wiping with it is mutter. So based on what Rish Lakish is saying, now obviously the Gemara could have very well answered Gavra Gavra Karamis. Would he bring a contradiction from one Amora onto another? Rish Lakish has his opinion. Rav Huna is allowed to have his opinion, especially since Rav, we learned earlier in the Masech, that Rav holds that in general in this din of Dabash and Meskaven, the halacha is like Rav Yehuda, that it's also. But still, the Gemara is looking for another answer. Ella, no. So again, it can't be Rav Huna is not allowing it because you're ruining the field, because that would be also on weekdays as well. Can't be he's not allowing it because you're going to rip off the grass from the stone on Shabbos, because if you're just doing that in the course of wiping, then it's only accidental, and Rish Lakish says that's allowed. Ella, Dilma, Nokin, Eloi, the Shodi, the Tachoi. What happens is, the problem is, he might end up taking a stone or a pebble from higher up on the field, meaning if let's say there's a little mound of dirt in one place on the field, he might take a piece of dirt or a rock or whatever from that place and use it for wiping, the shoddy latatoi, and then he's going to throw it onto a lower down place into one of the holes or grooves or whatever that was made by the plowing. And umechayev mishum de rabba, and then he's going to be chayev on the grounds of what Rabba said in the previous parak. The Amar Rabba, hoysele guma, if there was a hole in the ground, with tamama, and he filled up the hole with dirt, the bias chayev mishum boina. If this happens in the house, inside the house, then he's chayev on the grounds of the malacha of boina. But sada chayev mishum chodesh, and if it was in the field, then he's chayev for the malacha of chodesh of plowing, because that makes it that now the field is more easily plantable. So the issue of smoothing out the ground would apply whether the field is plowed or not. But this that we're saying about that you might take a piece from one place from a mound and put it into a groove in the ground, that's more likely to happen in a plowed field where you have a bunch of hard clods of dirt that you're more likely to be able to use for wiping. So those are the diggings. So you're not allowed to go. So you're not allowed for that reason to go in a plowed field. Not so much because going to the bathroom itself is the problem, but because of afterwards what he might do when he wipes himself. Gufa. Okay. Getting back to what we said, Amr Shlokish. We said that a stone or a rock or a piece of dirt or whatever, that grass is growing on it. We said you're allowed to wipe with that on Shabbos. But if you actually pull off the grass from it on Shabbos, then it would be an issur d'oraisa and you chayav chatos. Amar Rav Papi, so the Papi says, based on this, Shma Mina, Min Rish Lakish, Chay Parfisa Shori V'Taltuli. We see from what Rish Lakish is saying that you're allowed to pick up a parfisa on Shabbos. Now, what's the point? Rish Lakish is saying like this. The stone itself is saying you're allowed to wipe it. But on the face of it, don't you have an issue if the stone is growing grass on it and you're picking it up off the ground? Wouldn't that itself be a malacha of tolish? Fine, you're not ripping the grass off the stone, but you're taking the grass further away from the rest of the dirt where it's getting its life force, where it's getting its moisture and whatever that it's going to grow off of. So therefore, on the face of it, that itself should be usur. Just to pick up such a rock should be usur because of tolish. And the fact that Rish Lakish is saying that not, that you are allowed to pick it up and you're even allowed to wipe with it, shows by the same token you would be allowed to pick up a parfisa. What is a parfisa? So Rashi describes like this. Basically what it means is it's a flower pot that has holes, but specifically Rashi brings from a Trubas and Gaonim like this. It's a form of kaporis that they used to do in those days. They would make little baskets, little woven baskets out of lulav leaves, and fill them up with dirt and fertilizer or whatever. And then a couple of weeks before Rosh Hashanah, they would start preparing these a couple of weeks before Rosh Hashanah. They would plant seeds in them. They would plant bean seeds in them or something. So the seed starts growing over there in the dirt inside this makeshift flower pot. Then what happens is, Erev Rosh Hashanah, each person takes their parfisa and swings it around their head 7 times and says, Zeh Chalifasi Zeh Tzmorasi, and throws the parfisa into the river. So that was their form of kaparis. That was instead of nowadays, we do kaparis with a chicken. So in those days, they did kaparis, so they didn't notice you. They did them on Erev Rosh Hashanah, not Erev Yom Kippur, like we do nowadays, and they did it using this parfisa rather than using chickens as we do. Anyway, the point is, so the Papi is saying, given what Rish Lakish is saying about that you're allowed to pick up the stone on Shabbos, even though it's got grass growing on it, and you're still allowed to on Shabbos, and it's not a problem that you're taking it away from the rest of the dirt. So by the same token, the parfisa, which also has holes in it, and also the beans or whatever that are growing in it, therefore the seeds that are inside it are getting nourishment from the ground. Nevertheless, you're still able to pick it up on Shabbos, and the fact that you're removing it further away from the ground is not considered a problem. By the way, the Chassam Sofer mentions an interesting idea. So why did they use this form of kaparis? The way we do it nowadays, when we use chickens, okay, you know, it says in the Siddur, because a chicken is called gever and a person is called gever. Where did they get this kind of kaparis that we're talking about over here? So the Chassam Sofer says, imagine that a person has Rachmon Olsan, there was a gzeira on him in Hashemayim, that his descendants are going to be wiped out. Krisas Zare. So what you do is the seeds that he's planting over here represent his zera, and then when he throws them into the river, that's like the equivalent of a person dying of chenek. So therefore, he throws the parfisa into the river, that so to speak, if there was a zera min hashamayim that his children should die, Rachman al-San of Ashkara, which we talked about earlier in the Masech, there's some kind of disease of the throat that makes a person be unable to breathe. So then this should be a kapara that instead now his zera has been thrown into the river and drowned that way. Okay. Anyway, so again, the poppy is saying you're allowed to move it because iron has holes in it, and therefore the seeds in it are getting nourishment from the ground. Doesn't matter. It's the same thing as Shmuel has said about being allowed to pick up the piece of dirt or the rock off the ground with grass on it in order to be able to wipe. Mashka for Rav Kahana. However, Rav Kahana says I don't like that comparison. Im Amru B'Torah. Okay, the Chachamim said Rish Lakish said you're allowed to pick up such a rock where it's really necessary, where you need it to wipe with. Yomru Shaloi L'Torah. Should we say the same din applies even where it's not for that Torah? Maybe only fine when you need it to wipe. Then fine, you have no choice. Then you're allowed to. But not because of COVID, I believe. But not just to pick up the parfisa where it doesn't have that purpose. Amar Abaya, parfisa. So now, when it comes to this flower pot with holes or this thing with the beans growing in it that's made out of olive leaves, hoyov osaliya. Then Abaya says, since we already are talking about it, lema be milta. Let's say another din regarding this parfisa. If the parfisa was on the ground, and instead you took it and put it on top of pegs, so it's separated from the ground, then he's chayev on the ground, that he's removing it from the ground. Now actually, Tosfos says Rashi mentions also, that it's not really literally chayev. It's not an iser daraisa, because if it was an iser daraisa to do it, then it wouldn't even be allowed to cover the abriah. So therefore, what we mean is it's osur because it's like toish. So it's not literally chayev, and then it's not literally chayev daraisa. It's only drabbanim. The point is, again, because he's removing it from the ground, so it's further away from the ground, so now it's not getting as much nourishment and as much moisture from the ground as it was before. And if the other way around, if the parfisa was on top of pegs, and he put it instead on the ground, then he'd be chayev, again, we mean dirabanon, then he'd be chayev on the grounds of neteya, because now he's bringing it closer to the ground, and therefore he's making that now it's going to grow better. It's going to get more nourishment and more moisture and whatever from the ground. Here Rashi and Tosfos are saying that when you say that it's also, we're saying it's also only midrabanan, because otherwise how could Rish Lakish allow it when we're talking about Jinda Raisa? So actually, the Rambam paskins that it is actually also daraisa in these cases. The Rambam paskins that if a person takes something that has something growing in it, for example, the flower pot or whatever, and picks it up off the ground, puts it on pegs, then he'd actually be chayev daraisa. So in that case, you have the question of so how does that fit? How does that fit with all Gemara over here? So the Magid Mishnah so the Magid Mishnah talks over there about that he says when would it be allowed? When would the Shlokish say it was allowed? Taka only if the tzur was not on the ground in the first place. If it was on the ground, then you actually would have a problem picking it up. But if it was already off the ground, then Rish Lakish says you can pick it up and you can wipe with it, and there's no problem of the fact that there's grass growing on it. That's the Magid Mishnah says over there. That's how the Rambam would learn all Gemara. Amar Rav Yechanan, continuing on the topic of wiping, Rav Yechanan says, also the kaneach the cheres b'Shabbos. You're not allowed to wipe with a piece of earthenware on Shabbos, a broken piece of earthenware. So the Gemara says, my time, but why not? Ilema mishum sakana. Is it because of the danger? Because after all, you have the edges of a piece of earthenware are sharp, and you might rip the skin over there. So I feel the b'chol nami. Then it should be also even on weekdays. The ela mishum shopim. Are you going to say the reason is because of the problem of kishuf? Because what happens is if a person takes a piece of earthenware and wipes with it, and later on somebody gets a hold of that piece of earthenware, they're able to use it for kishuf against the person who used it. So if that was the case, again, then it should be usur even on weekdays, because the same danger exists on weekdays and on Shabbos. The Elam Mishum HaShoras Mimin, are you going to say the problem is because he might rip out hairs over there? Again, Dover She'en Meskaven, who? It's a Dover She'en Meskaven. Rabbi Yochanan holds that Dover She'en Meskaven is Mutter, and it's not necessarily, on the face of it, it's not necessarily Psik Reisha. So why should it be Osir? So the Gemara says, Amar Lahu Rav Nosson Bar Oshia. So Rav Nosson Bar Oshia says, Gavra Rabba Amar Milsa, a great person, namely Rabbi Yochanan, said something, name a Beit Taima, so therefore we have to say a reason. We can't just say that we're going to accept what he says. Without that, we have to find a reason. We have to say, Rabbi Yochanan obviously had a reason for what he said. Let's try to figure out what he means. What he means is like this, Loi Mi Boya B'chol De Osir. He means to say like this, needless to say on weekdays of Osir, where on weekdays you're able to use any stone that you find, and therefore you don't have, and therefore you're not going to be mutter to use earthenware. Avo b'Shabbos, but you would think when it comes to Shabbos, hoyo v'ikatodas kli olav, since a piece of earthenware, a broken piece of earthenware, is considered a keli, and it does have a function, as we're going to learn in the next Mishnah, which we'll learn tomorrow, Be'ez Hashem, that you have a small piece of earthenware a person could be chayav for carrying on Shabbos because it has a function. You can use it to carry things in it or whatever. So therefore, you would think on Shabbos, maybe the Chachamim would have reason to be matir you to use a piece of cheres because at least that way you're doing less of a problem of mukta. Instead of using a stone, which in and of itself is mukta, and it's only the Chachamim are allowing it for the sake of covered abriyas, maybe better you should be using a piece of cheres, which is still considered a kevi, and therefore at least you're not being over on the din of mukta. Shafei jami, you would think would okay. Kamash malon, therefore, Rabbi Yochanan wants to tell us that even not, the Chachamim do not want Chacham do not want you to do that because even though it's true you're going to be avoiding the problem of mukta, but on the other hand, you have the problem that now you're going to be either in danger of ripping the skin over there or because of truffin or because of kishur. So therefore, that's the Yochanan point. Okay. Rava Masnila Mishum HaSharas Nimin. Rava explains that Rabbi Yochanan is actually talking about because the problem that you're going to rip out hairs over there. The Gemara had said it's not Dover, it's Dover She'en Meskaven, but Rava learned that it's because of that. The Kashle did Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yochanan, so he had a problem that Rabbi Yochanan seemed to be contradicting himself. Me, Omer Rabbi Yochanan, also the Kaneach B'Cheres B'Shabbos. Is Rabbi Yochanan really saying that you're not allowed to use a piece of Cheres to wipe with on Shabbos? Alma Dover She'en Meskaven Osir, which goes to show then that he would hold Dover She'en Meskaven as Osir, like Rabbi Huda. While Omer Rabbi Yochanan Halacha Kestam Mishnah, but Rabbi Yochanan says that in general Halacha is like a Stam Mishnah. Utnan, you learn a Mishnah in Nazir. Nazir Choyfe from a Fasvis, this week's parish actually. A Nazir is allowed to smooth out his hair or rub his hand, put his fingers. Through his hair, umafasbis, and he's allowed to scrub his hair with shampoo or whatever. Abalois sodas, but he's not allowed to comb his hair because choifa from umafasbis, he might pull out hairs, he might not. It's not psikresha, but it's dovashen umaskabin. As opposed to combing is inevitably going to pull out hairs, and therefore it's psikresha. And Reb Shimon agrees that that's author. Anyway, the point is, so that's a Stam Mishnah, like Rabbi Shimon, that Dover She'en Meskaven is Mutter, unless it's Sikra Isha. So Rabbi Yochanan holds a Lachak as Stam Mishnah. So how could he be saying over here that you're not allowed to use a Kli Cheres, that you're not allowed to use Cheres because it's going to pull out hairs, because it might pull out hairs? So therefore, as Moses Ela Machvarta Kedem Nassim Bar Oshia, so therefore, Rabbi ends up with Rabbi Nassim Bar Oshia's explanation that the problem is because of Sakana, either the Sakana that he might rip the skin or the Sakana of Kishur. So the Gemara says, my chopim, what do we mean when we come to kishuf? What's the danger of kishuf involving cheres? So the Gemara gives an example. Ki hodr of chiste v'rav barahuna havo ka'azli ba'arba. Rav chiste and rav barahuna one time were traveling on a boat, or they were going to travel on a boat. Amra lahu ahu ahi matrinita. There was a certain matron, a certain goyisha, important lady, said to them, oisvan v'hadaychu, let me sit with you in the ship. The lawyer swore they didn't let her sit. They didn't let her sit with him. The tackle, why not? So the Mephoshim, and I got to give a couple of possible reasons. First of all, we learned in the second paragraph, we talked about that crossing that going on a bridge or going on a ferry in those days is a very dangerous thing. So there, and we learned the possibility over there that maybe you shouldn't be going on there together with a guy, because then what happens? We said one explanation over there. We said what happens if Hashem decided that the guy now it's time to punish him, that he should drown. So now now you're going to be caught up with that, or so you're going to end up being collateral damage to that. So that could have been a problem. It could have been a problem of Yehud, or it could have been a problem because they're afraid of Kishon, which in fact, as we're going to see, she did in fact end up trying to use Kishon on them. Now the Ben Yoyada explains. I mean, we're not talking about a public boat. We have many, many people going on. We're talking about these two Chachamim had hired the boat for themselves. So now she's asking them to let them sit with them, to let them join, to let them go on the boat, and she didn't, and they didn't want to. So they didn't want to let them go on. So she, being a goyta, Omra Ihi Milsa, she said a thing, she said some kind of spell, Asautal Arba, and she stopped the boat from going. Omru Inhu Milsa, so they in turn said a certain thing, Vishayuha, and they were able to get the boat to be able to go again, to undo her kishuf, and then the boat was able to go. What was it that they said? Rashi over here says that they used the Shem Kodesh. They used the Shem Tara, Rashi says. They used the name of Tara, meaning a name of Hashem. The same story is told in the Gemara in Chulin, and there Rashi explains that it means they used a name of Kishuf, and they were allowed to in order to save themselves. So actually, there's an interesting discussion about this question of which one. Are you allowed to use a name of Hashem? Are you allowed to use classical Kabbalah like that to save yourself in a situation like this where they were stuck? Or maybe not? And then the question is the other way around. Are you allowed to use Kishuv in a case like that where you're stuck in order to save yourself? Or maybe there wasn't even necessarily any danger. They just can't go. So are you allowed to do such things? So there is actually a good deal of discussion among Achronim about the ins and outs of that. Maybe you are allowed to use Hashem's name for that purpose, but again, only if you're on the level to do it, which of course, the Shach brings that they're from the Lavush, that nowadays pretty much nobody is on that level, so you're really not allowed to. But then you have the other question, are you allowed to use Kishuf to undo Kishuf, and maybe even you're allowed to, even if it's not dangerous, even if you're not in a dangerous situation. They bring a verse from the Baal Shem Tov that when the Gemara says over here, Omru Inu Milsa, the word is not supposed to be actually Milsa, but rather Milos, which stands for the Pasuk Machashepa Loi Sechaya. So they said that in order to break her kishuf. Anyway, Omru Lahu, so she saw she can't get anywhere with them with her kishuf. So Omer Lahu, she says to them, my Eved Lahu, okay, what can I do with you people? You people act in a way that you're not subject to Kishuf. Deloy mekanech lechu b'chasba, you never wipe using a piece of earthenware. So that way I'm not able to get a piece of earthenware that you use and use it for Kishuf against you. V'lekote lechu kina amanaychu, you never kill a louse right there on your clothes. If you have a louse on your clothes, you first take it off and then you kill it. And when you have a bundle of vegetables that the gardener bundled up to sell or whatever, you don't pull out one thing from the bundle. You first untie the bundle and then you eat the vegetables. So in other words, the point is all of those things are good to avoid tissue. So she's saying, I know that you people are careful about these things, so therefore I see that I can't help you, that I can't manage to do anything with Kishuf against you. Now, actually, the truth is, we see that she was able to do her Kishuf against them originally. They were able to break it. So she thought, she didn't hear them say anything, she saw the boat starting to go, so she figured that her Kishuf was ineffective, she figured that,
she figured that her kinship, after all, was ineffective. So she figured that must be because they're careful about these things. Really, they weren't necessarily careful about these things. And in fact, her kinship was originally effective precisely because they weren't careful about these things. So therefore, so we see from that, you know, these kinds of things, doing or not doing, these kinds of things have effects when it comes to when it comes to kish.
But they saw the boat stopped. Everyone saw the boat stopped.
But it only stopped for a second. And I guess she didn't, according to that explanation, she didn't realize that the boat had actually stopped. They did it so quickly. They said their milsa so quickly that she didn't actually realize. Marsha brings a different explanation also, that maybe what it is that she was able to affect the boat, but she wasn't able to affect Rav Chisda and Rabba themselves. She would have liked to use kishuv on them themselves, but she found that's not going to be effective because they're careful about these three things, so she was reduced to having to do something to the boat. And even that, they were able to undo with their milsa.
Yeah,
so the Chavis Yer has an interesting tshuva where somebody asked him, why on earth would these three things help a person be prevented against kishuv? So the Chavis Yer says, what kind of question is that? Better you should ask how kishuv works in the first place. But the Chavis Yer says, okay, maybe you can. The Chavis Yer says, okay, maybe you can find sort of a balabatish explanation that if a person uses a piece of cheres to wipe themselves, even though we were saying before it could be dangerous. So it shows like they're the kind of person who doesn't care about danger. They're the kind of person he doesn't wipe well with it. So therefore, like he's still dirty. If he doesn't even cut open the bundle of vegetables first, he just grabs the vegetable out of the bundle. Then it shows that he's greedy. It shows that he's gluttonous. So maybe you could say that those kinds of things show that a person is disgusting or gluttonous or whatever, and therefore it's more likely that kishuv would affect them. But ultimately, the Chavis Yer says that, come on, you can't really explain any of these things. It's the milam and ateva. You can't really ask why this works and why this doesn't work. Okay. So we'll continue tomorrow about the Shem, talking more about dinim involving wiping. And in that connection, also, we'll talk about what the dinim nowadays are involving toilet paper on Shabbos.
Thank you very much. Rabbi Alex.
I saw somewhere that it says there's only way to get clean is to use...
Is what? Yaakov, I lost you there a second. The only way to get clean is what?
Hello?
Yeah, still there.
You ever hear of such a thing? The only way to get clean is to use water?
Well, there is that idea. It says in Shulchan Aruch, Midas Chassidus is Luchas Pias Habas B'mayim, it says, yeah.
Okay.
So there is that, yeah.
Okay.
Okay. But if you don't have, then you use one of these things. Okay.
Okay.
Everyone.